Welcome to the podcast that's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist, the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee, and with me is Coach Chad Timmerman.
Hi, everybody.
And our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello.
And we are going to answer more of your coaching questions today. You can submit them to us at support@trainerroad.com. You can, whatever question it is that has to do with training, cycling, equipment, riding, whatever it may be, send it on in and we'll do our best to answer it. We get a lot of questions every week, so we just answer as many as we can that we feel are the most applicable or perhaps provide the best learnings for everyone. So go ahead, submit those questions, support@trainerroad.com. You can find this podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, or wherever else you aggregate and listen to your podcasts. And you can also leave us reviews on there. We like that. In fact, somebody on this, so a question that we'll highlight today, he said that we should receive a Tony Award or something like that. I don't even know if they have
that. That's Broadway, man.
That's what I thought. Yeah. So
you got to sing and dance, Jonathan.
But that is the sort of praise that guarantees we'll answer your question.
Indeed. Scratch
Here's
the back,
fun,
right?
Fun behind the scenes fact is Jonathan is actually dancing right now.
It's true. I have an ability to dance silently. You can't hear it at all. Yeah. So, and also we apologize for getting the podcast out late last week. I was having a lot of fun down in Southern Utah. I was riding my mountain bike in Moab. It was awesome. So, and by the way, if you guys want to see pictures or anything else like that, just check it out. I'm putting up pictures and I put up GoPro videos that made Nate a little queasy this morning.
Oh, it's so crazy.
It's yeah. So you can check them out. Just LeeJonathan_ on any of my social channels, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. You can see it. You can also catch behind the scenes stuff there too on all the different channels, on Snapchat, everything else. And you can see some behind the scenes stuff from here at the office. So let's get started though with Drew's question. He says, now that I have a power meter, I've learned just how garbage the numbers can get on outdoor hill repeats, especially near the top of a climb. And I assume by garbage, he means variable and or the him dropping his power, even though he thought he was maintaining it. That's kind of how perception works, right?
Yeah, your perceived effort's the same,
but your power is just slowly dropping. So he says, is there any training benefit to riding to this sort of burnout on repeats, or should I start easier and focus on hitting a consistent mark throughout as I would on the trainer? And he says, using Trainer Road, of course. Thanks so much for doing this show and putting out a great product, by the way. I really appreciate it. Best, Drew.
So, Drew, this comes down to two matters, really. One is the quality of the interval that you're currently enduring. If it's way off the mark, or you know, if it starts really strong and falls apart early, if you're making it really close to the end of it, I mean, you kind of have to assess the quality of that interval. Is the interval garbage? Then, yeah, something needs to change right away. If it goes well up until, you know, maybe 20 seconds before the end of a climb and a 2 minute or 3 minute repeat, well, you're fine. I mean, that's going to happen pretty commonly. So the quality of that current interval, and then what does it do to the rest of your workout? Are you blowing yourself up to the point where every subsequent interval is a little worse than the one you just did? Again, something needs to be addressed. But in terms of, say, VO2 max repeats, and when you talk about hill repeats, I'm guessing that's what they are. Could be anaerobic repeats, but either way, quality is paramount. So if the quality is suffering, then something needs to change. And it might just be, like we discussed in weeks prior, a slight reduction. You know, you're targeting 120%. Well, maybe 115% is where you start, and that allows you to finish at 115%. So burning yourself out, it definitely affects the quality of the workout. If it has a big effect on the quality of the workout, something needs to change.
So Chad, to put this into context, let's say you do your first repeat of VO2 max at 130, mm-hmm. and then the next one, like which is high, right? That's like probably too high. The next one
is 130%, by the way.
Yeah, 100% of your FTP. The next one's 120. The next one's 110. The next mm-hmm. one's 105. It'd be better to then have the first one be at 120 and do 120 each time.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really good point. And I think a lot of people or a lot of athletes dive into the workout. They're fresh, they're motivated, and they maybe overdo it on the first couple. So it sounds like that in Drew's case too.
I think that's what happens when you don't have a power meter too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is like, and those who don't have a power meter for outside, you could do it with time too. If the wind is consistent and you're going up a hill, you know, I've done that too, where, you know, like you're a quarter of the way up the climb and you're like, okay, I'm 58 seconds is where I hit this point, right? And then you kind of pace it similar each time.
So the way that I use hill repeats and a power meter, I find, Drew, actually has completely changed how I do repeats. So I assume that you're in the same process. But as Nate and Chad said, the key importance, just like with Trainer Road, how you have a power target for each one, not an effort target, but you have a power target, a direct number in wattage. I make sure that if I'm going to do VO2 max efforts, that they are going to fall specifically within that VO2 max range that I can sustain for, if it's eight intervals or however many it's going to be, two intervals, whatever it is. I make sure that I have a target beforehand in my head and I follow that. I also don't shoot for a normalized or an average power during that. I honestly just look at it every second and I try to keep it as close as I can to what I want it to be. If you find yourself a lot of the time, if you start out super hard and you're just going off of normalized or average for that interval and you're aiming to have an average power that falls directly in line or normalized, then what you'll do is you'll end up not following your power target later on to try to balance that out. And really the best thing you can do is every second, just try to be better than the last second.
Yeah. When the interval's done though, I hit lap and then look at the average. And
yes.
I'm like, oh, I
always
did 280.
Informative.
Yeah, and then the next time, I'm like, hopefully I hit 280 again.
Yes.
And
Drew, you're cutting over. I'm guessing you're not training by heart rate, but more you're using perceived exertion, in which case you have a transition to make. You're going from, you know, how it feels to now actual numbers. So before, you know, when you start out fresh, didn't feel real hard, so you probably went out too hard. Then as you faded over the course of the interval, it started feeling really hard, so you maybe let up a little bit, and your power fell as a result. So going from how it feels to what's actually happening in terms of power data is going to be a bit of a transition for you.
Chad, I have another question for you.
Shoot.
With these lines, let's say we start at 120. Let's say you're aiming, your workout says six VO2 max intervals at 120. You get into the fourth one, you know, it's a little hard at the end. Fifth one, complete garbage. You can't hit anything. Mm-hmm. Do you do the sixth one or do you go home?
I typically recommend starting the sixth one. I mean, sometimes you just have a bad repeat. I wait till you have two, not necessarily failed efforts, but two lackluster efforts where you can see things have gone from good to bad and then bad to worse. And that's when you cut it off. But one bad repeat doesn't necessarily mean the workout's over.
Yeah, I've seen that kind of maybe in more anaerobic intervals too, where you have maybe 15.
Yeah.
And on 11, 12, 13, I miss my target by 30 watts.
It's like, that's where the lull seems to come, is not in the first two-thirds of the workout, but in that latter third, and usually right at the beginning of that latter third. So, you know, in like a 15-repeat workout, it's right around 10, 11, 12, when you just start losing the motivation, but then you get through that sticking spot, and you get toward the end of the workout, and motivation starts to pick back up. You realize, okay, I'm almost there, I can do this. But there's that tough spot, and it's just like in a 40K TT, where you get to that third quarter, where it's just a really tough spot to be.
I think that's kind of like the difference between like high-level athletes and low-level athletes is the high-level athletes. So there's two things we're talking about. One is your body physically can't finish the intervals, and two is you lose motivation and you're not pushing yourself hard enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that the high-level athletes know the difference, and they know when their body's bad, and their mental toughness is so much more than the lower level athletes. And
yeah, certainly. I just term
people don't talk about it enough. Like, we just talk about the numbers, and it's like, like Justin Rossi says, cycling is incredibly mental, mental.
There's a big difference between quitting and failing. You know, failing implies some sort of breakdown. The body simply can't do it anymore. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. Whereas quitting is more of a, and it doesn't even need to be a conscious choice. It could be a subconscious one. Either way, there's something mentally that's turning off, saying, nope, no more of this.
And it's so easy to convince yourself also. You really have to, your mind is very persuasive when it's under that type of duress, you know, or when your body is under that type of duress. It's going to be, if you know, repeats or any interval workout for this case, doesn't matter if you're inside or outside. It's just as much an opportunity to train yourself mentally as it is physically to withstand that stuff.
I can't count the amount of times that I've heard triathletes say that they bonked, bonked meaning they ran out of glycogen. Hmm. So sometimes too, I think what people say is they like got low blood sugar, but they say they bonked, like they couldn't compete anymore. If you want to see what bonking looks like, that's where like you can't move anymore. Google Julie Moss Ironman 1982, and you will see somebody bonking trying to finish an Ironman. Yeah, but you will see mental toughness too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if so, when you bonk, I think a lot of triathletes, at least the lower end's like, oh, I bonked, I felt really bad. Like, yes, you're going to feel bad during a triathlon, and it's different. Like, I think they're just not being mentally tough enough, and they're not really doing what happened to Julie Moss there. Watch that video. It's freaking crazy.
But you see, like, system shutdown taking place there, but you also have to consider the fact that it happened in, like, the last 100 meters of the race. How does she get to right then? I mean, again, there's still a mental switch at that point. Her body was just hanging on, but she saw that finish line, and for whatever reason, just that moment crippled her.
Yeah, look at, or Google if you guys want, Bradley Wiggins, Paris-Roubaix, and then add the word skinny after that, and you'll see this picture of him when he rode for Garmin, and he seriously looks like a victim of a war crime. Like, it is terrible. He looks so depleted, and it's after a race, and to be honest, I've never seen anybody look that bad. Sorry, Bradley, but I've never seen anybody look that bad, but he finished the race. And I would say it's fair to say that he was probably completely in what most people, or past what most people would call a bonking stage. So,
well, yeah, but I mean, there's like a physical thing where your muscles don't have any glycogen and you can't walk anymore. And Bradley Wiggins, that's a good example of mental toughness, right? Like,
yes.
Few people on the planet are as tough as Tour de France winners.
Yes, and now record holders. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. And one thing you said, Nate, before we move off of the hill repeats thing, if you don't have a power meter, I liked how you brought that up with distance. That's a really good thing to use if you have like hill repeats or anything like that. And I do a workout, and I still have power targets with it, but I started doing it before I rode with power. I started doing it without, and essentially that just descending intervals, which doesn't sound as fun as you think if you like descending on a bike. Descending intervals are very different. It's you maintain, if you know, it's 1 minute on, and then after that you'll have 45 seconds off or something like that, and then the next one is going to be slightly harder, and it's going to be 45 seconds on, and then the next one, and then you reduce your rest, and you keep reducing until you get down to 15 seconds, and that 15 second effort is all out. And it's every time it just go up the hill, then you turn around and you rest, and then once your bike turns around again, you're going again, and you keep doing that type of thing, and it's easy to see when you're doing intervals like that, how far you got this time during that set and during that interval compared to last time. And as long as the wind is consistent, that can be a good gauge for you.
Yeah, it's motivating, especially too, if it's not just power, but if you lose weight, then you're going faster too, which is the whole point, right? Going faster.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of weight, before we get to the next question, gentlemen, how are you doing with your weight loss? I had to tell, before you guys answer, here at the office, we never said there was a competition, but we all just implicitly think there's implied, a competition.
Yeah.
And people have been bringing chocolate cake, cheesecake. I just brought a bunch of dried fruit today because me and my wife are like, my kids won't eat it because it's organic and like too dark colored.
Yeah.
They're little teeny kids. They're 2 and 5. So Chad, how's your weight loss going?
I'm down from 185 to 180. And if the only fat measurement I have is the little Tanita scale that I use at home. And it was for the longest time stuck at 11. And then I've had it drop to 10. And now I've had it pretty much stuck at 9. So I'm going to estimate about a 2% drop in body fat.
Is that the athlete or the?
Yeah.
Athlete setting?
Yes. Solid. Good job, Chad.
So far, so good.
Because I'm going to say I'm surprised. Chelsea was telling us that she saw you taking a little bit of that chocolate cake and the cheesecake.
Yep, a little piece of each. That way I can just kind of have it and then get past it.
Nice. Smart stuff.
Jonathan?
It's not going that great.
You're already the skinny guy, though.
Yeah, but I still have, I definitely have room to lose. So we went in Moab. We went to this place called Milt's. If you ever go to Moab, go to Milt's Burgers. They're closed on Mondays, but they serve these Wagyu and Kobe beef burgers, and they are so good. So good. So I had a burger that was probably just an insane amount of calories, a Southwest chili
just
burger.
Just a hamburger.
Oh, it was so good. And then I had a couple of French fries from my brother.
A couple
was
of French fries.
On his plate. So
I got to show you how to eat someday, Jonathan.
Oh, I've seen it. You should see Nate Pearson eat food, guys.
It's a absurd marvel. I've never seen somebody put away that much food.
It's insane.
It's a talent.
It is. And then you, Nate, how's your weight loss going?
Okay, so when I did the DEXA scan, I was 200 pounds. This morning, I was like 194. So I'm losing weight. It's not actually losing as fast as I want to, but I had my excuses. I went on that 1 week all-inclusive vacation where I ate way too much. And then I was sick for a week and couldn't work out. Actually, I have an FTP test coming up next week. We're going to get our fat tested again and Right now, this is March 18th, so and we're going to do it.
It's going to be an April 10th.
April 10th, yeah. And we'll do it again. My body fat scale, I think I'm 14 or 15 on the athlete setting. So I've lost a few percentage of body fat. Actually, Chad and I, we have a in our coffee room, we have like a full weight set of like a bench press and a squat rack and pull-ups and dips. So every time we get coffee, we're doing that. And I feel maybe this time I'm not losing weight as fast as I would before, because before I would like not, I wouldn't lift any weights, and I think I would lose a lot of muscle mass and upper body. But I don't, I'm not really super competitive racing this year, so I want to keep some upper body. But that's the cool thing about the DEXA is I'll be able to see if like I've lost a lot of lean muscle mass and then how much body fat I've actually lost. So
quantifiably. Yeah. And the only type of quantification I have is I was 150 pounds when I went and got the DEXA scan, and I just measured yesterday and I was at 147. So race weight last year was 141.
Goals, because I don't want to, I can't wait till I get to the point where I can just maintain and I have to have a caloric deficit. Yeah. I don't know, like, maybe I should aim for a body fat percentage rather than a weight.
Yeah, so I'm going for 5%. I was at 7%, and I'm trying to go to 5. That's my goal.
What was your DEXA, though, wasn't 7?
My DEXA was higher. So, yeah, so my DEXA was 11.9. So measuring by the DEXA, that would be dropping down to about 9%.
And Chad, what about you?
I'm really only looking at weight. Obviously, I want to get leaner in the process, so I'm kind of just using the mirror method in that case. But I just want to get down to 170, which has historically been my excuse me, my best race weight.
Yeah, I've raced at 137 before, and it was horrendous. My power every day I woke up and it was like watching the hourglass tick, or like just like the sand drop to the bottom. And that was my power. It was just going down. My ability to maintain high levels of power was just dropping through the ground. So
maybe my tinnitus scale down to like 10, like where you're at right now, Chad, and that'll probably put me around 190, but I don't think I want to go into the 180s, because at 6'6",
it gets to a point where it's so hard to maintain it that it just loses all its luster.
Yeah. If you want to lose weight, though, it's way easier when you're a triathlete and you're doing two workouts a day and running 15 miles on the weekend and stuff.
I found a trick to help with. So we were talking about going to bed hungry and how that really helps. Uh-huh. Well, I should say it's effective. It's like an effective measure for knowing that you're starting yourself off in a fasted state the next morning, hopefully. So I drink a lot of like a soda water, like Pellegrino and everything else like that. And drinking that late at night instead of other water, it tends to make me feel more full instead of standard water.
Oh, yeah. My wife does that. You can get it at the store in the U.S. You can get like a, it's like club soda like that, but it will have like a little bit of lime or like orange or lemon in it. And there's no calories and it's all natural. It's just like a couple drops of lime juice, but that's really, it tastes really good.
And Gerolsteiner is one that's like so bubbly, it'll bubble your tongue right out of your mouth. But that stuff is extremely full, or I should say it fills you up. You feel very full afterwards. So
bubbly water, who knew?
Yeah. Yeah. It helps me. There, I have no science behind that. I should clarify. It helps me. So anecdotally. All right. Let's move on to John's question. He says, "Hi guys, podcast continues to be a great listen. Keep up the great work. A confounding question for you regarding FTP. Mine won't budge. I completed sweet spot base level 1 and 2, or those are the different, not level 1 and 2, but those are the different phases of that plan, so they're cumulative. I just took the 20-minute test to jump into sweet spot base low volume, but what has me a bit peeved is that I have yet to have any tangible gain in FTP after 4 months of structured training. I took my first 20-minute test on October 10th on a spin bike and hit 270. It wasn't on trainer road. It was recorded manually and adjusted down 5%. I did an 8-minute test to kick off sweet spot base, on November 14th on the same type of spin bike, but not the exact one. And it dropped to 267. So we're already recognizing that he's got variables in here, which with testing, it's always tough to really count on your data if you have variables and equipment like this.
267 and 270, that's well within the margin of error for a power meter.
Certainly. 3 watts. Exactly right. Yep. I figured this was either due to a switch in bikes or the fact that Trainer Road recorded the ride instead of my manual recording. So we don't do anything different with the power data. The power data is just delivered to us. Isn't that correct, Nate? Or
yeah, we as most head units do, like with a Garmin or something, is we take a sample every second of the data, and then that's used for it. But so power meters, I don't know what spin bike you're using, but if it did have an actual power meter in it, but power meters, nothing's more accurate than plus or minus 1.5%. Mm-hmm. So right there, 3 watts, that's definitely within it. So you could have a machine doing it 10 times and it would be in that range. Yep. So I wouldn't say that's a change at all.
Yeah. And then he says, sweet spot base, the first phase of it was feeling too easy. So I bumped my FTP to 270 after 2 or 3 rides. I was able to complete the training plan feeling good. And for the second phase of that training plan, that sweet spot base 2, the 8-minute test, you did the 8-minute test, switched to your new Tax Neo and scored a 265. So holy cow, he just brought in 2 more variables. And going from a spin bike to a real bike is going to change things. You're in a different position. Your body's going to be used to putting out power differently in those scenarios. Unless it's absolutely replicated, but even then, the inertia is probably going to feel pretty different on one trainer to that spin bike. So that
spin bike being extremely high inertia.
Yeah.
With a big flywheel.
Mm-hmm. In most cases, yeah, unless you're using a brake one or something like that. But even then, those are pretty big. And then you're also using the Tax Neo, which is another variable you've inserted there. So, and this time you scored a 265, so still pretty close. He says, this time I justified the drop based on the spinning bike to the Neo, that switch that he made. And I decided to bump my FTP to 270 anyway to gain some sort of mental accomplishment. Again, switching something. You're the master of inserting variables so far, John. The workouts in sweet spot base 2 were increasingly harder, which is actually intentional, right, Chad?
By design, yep.
Mm-hmm. However, I definitely felt stronger as I went from having to drop resistance 5% to complete the longer weekend 1.5-hour rides to just mixing in a few 5-second backspins. Nice, he's following the advice in the podcast. In the later intervals to keep me at target wattage and cadence. I just took the 20-minute test to kick the sweet spot base, or to kick off the next, I assume, sustained power build, maybe, is probably what he's saying with SB.
Yeah, low volume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he's moving into a sustained power build and he took the 20-minute test. So once again, this is a different testing protocol from 8 minutes to 20 again. And he said, and felt like it worked pretty well, only to score a 268. So to recap, he went from 270 to 267 to 265 to 268. But within that process, he changed from the 20-minute to the 8-minute test to the back to the 20-minute test from a spin bike to the spin bike and Trainer Road, to the spin bike, his road bike, the Tax Neo and Trainer Road. So although your FTP hasn't budged, John, your variables sure have. So that's
and the fact that he's feeling stronger too tells you something. And he's getting through harder workouts. He's taking less breaks. So something is obviously improving in terms of fitness. But I think really, John, you're starting kind of with your Tax Neo. That I think everything before that is kind of scrubbed. Not in terms of what it's done to your body. That's obviously still going to be there. But in terms of your data, I think you can't really relate what's happening now on the Neo to what's happened prior on the spin bike and the 2 different test formats. So I wouldn't be too discouraged. The fact is you're getting stronger. And I think the next test that you do, make it on the Neo, make it the 8-minute format, make it on a day you're fresh and motivated. I bet a lot that you're going to improve.
And two, John, I don't think you said how long you've been cycling, but I see all these plans you're doing of the low volume, and you know, low volume is low volume. Maybe it's time to jump up to the mid volume where this isn't enough stress to push you to the next level.
That's a good
you point. You kind of said like you went through it and you felt pretty good through the whole plan. Like I usually feel pretty bad at the like week 5, and then week 6 I feel halfway through the
pretty
recovery
terrible.
Week I feel bad, and then at the end of the week I'm like, this is amazing. Yeah. So that could be something as either adding some TSS fillers or jump up to the actual next plan.
Yeah, he says, do you think I'm a victim of wussing out when it comes to testing? I'm not working it hard enough or a combination therein. I'm 43 and felt like I was in good shape after a full season riding before the October 10th test. However, my approach used to be ride a pretty hard pace all the time. And that's in quotes there. Switching to structured training and resting, I expected at least some modest results at this point, as you should. I still am convinced my gray zone training couldn't be better than what Trainer Road has to provide. Your feedback and recommendations are greatly appreciated. So you're absolutely right in suspecting that just training without structure is not going to be better. Having structured work and structured rest and having it all prescribed is going to be better, certainly. Yeah.
Almost always. And you did bring up a good point, John. There is a possibility that when it comes to testing, you maybe psych yourself out. Maybe you're carrying a little too much fatigue into it. For whatever reason, you don't really ride to your full capabilities. So that is yet another possibility.
And I could see that in this case because he's gone from... I assume your anxiety level on days you take an FTP test is very high now because you've been worried about it for a few months. And not seeing that change, but all the while the variables have been changing. You know, my advice is to, as Chad said, isolate the variables and the data. In other words, now that you have a test that's done, decide on the 8-minute or 20-minute test format, whichever you feel is most conducive to the type of riding you do and to your type of performance, and stick to that test, stick to the same hardware, and move forward from here. And also, and don't worry. And also, one thing with an FTP test, I never set out with a number in mind. I know some people do, but I never do. All I do is I just focus on giving 100%, whatever that is, doing my absolute best to push myself. Because if I stick to a number, first of all, then I'm going to psych myself out beforehand because I'm going to be thinking I have to hit that number. And then if I start out and I'm below that number, then I'll get really frustrated with myself. And then number two, it doesn't matter if you don't hit that number. Remember, your FTP test is you giving it 100% on any given day. That may not be a great day. Like Chad said, you may be carrying fatigue into it. It doesn't necessarily mean you're getting slower. If you feel like it was a bad day, then you retest on another occasion. If you're doing the things you should be with training right, and like Nate said, maybe picking a higher volume plan is a better option for you. But if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing in terms of training and resting, you're going to be getting some type of increase.
And two, the if you are under testing, if you think that you're not performing FTP tests as well as you can, it's totally acceptable. Chad, back me up here if I'm wrong, or correct me if I'm wrong. Back me up, like a true CEO. Back me up, guys, if I'm wrong. Totally raise your FTP. And the way that you can tell if your FTP is right or not is those really hard workouts, the ones with the intensity factor, like an hour for 0.9 or even 90 minutes for 0.9. If you can get through those still, then your FTP is probably right. It's not too high. If you can't get through those, then maybe you back it back down.
Yeah, we have a question in a little bit that actually follows this up really well. We might even consider skipping ahead to that.
Cool.
Or at least making sure we work it in, where he asks, you know, when I can do more, should I do more? Is that always appropriate? And it's not. We can break it down then. But more times than not, especially when they're interval workouts and not just, you know, like an hour is 65%, but when they're interval workouts, they should be difficult. I mean, even sweet spot, by the last couple of intervals, you should really want the workout to be over with. And if you're never getting there, chances are you did probably underassess and you've got an FTP that's set a little too low for you to reap the full benefit of these workouts.
Do you want to, which question or whose question was that, Chad? Is it John's question?
Oh, and actually, while we're still on this, I want to add one thing in terms of FTP testing. One of the many reasons I like the 8-minute format, and I still haven't really picked a favorite format because I think they're both useful in different ways. But with the 8-minute format, what Jonathan said was, or to further his point of not targeting any particular wattage, is you have two cracks at this. So do the first one, maybe use the numbers to drive you. Maybe that's your carrot for that first one, and maybe you get a good test from it. And then on the second one, and I did this in my bike classes way back, I would actually blur the screen and put a timer up. So all people saw was the time, and just have them ride by feel. And not always, but plenty of times we got better test results from the basically blinded 8-minute interval. Yeah.
So Chad's going to bring up a big point and something that's a deficiency in our 8-minute test logic that you guys will know, and we're going to actually change this in our app. But let's say you do your first interval and you nail it and you do 300 watts. Your second one, you fall apart and it ends up being 200. Today, the app will average the two and do the data. You can personally throw out that second one because you just fell apart and just use the first one and do a 0.9, 9.
Yeah, just take 10% off of your best effort, because the logic we have behind that is faulty. So really all you need is one solid 8-minute effort. And if
well,
those
the
two
logic
efforts,
is just assuming that the efforts are going to be evenly
consistent.
Paced.
Yeah, and if in that case, you're going to get a good FTP estimation. But in the case that one effort goes really well and one goes really poorly, take that better effort, knock 10% off it, and then manually adjust your FTP.
And to be clear, in most cases too, it's actually not giving a lot of, because the most of the 8-minute tests that you see, the two intervals are a person trying to pace between them, you know, evenly. So it's not as if it's been giving data that's been wrong or anything else like that. And we are going to be changing it soon. So
The other thing is, John, over these 4 months, if you lost some weight, I would still call that a win. So if you lose weight and your FTP stays the same, you're still getting faster. And that would be cool if you would have put, I mean, for other people that you go in, if you have problems like this, like putting in your weight as you go through everything. And like, too, if John's weight puts him at like 5 watts a kilo and he's like, oh, I'm having problems going up on, or even 4 watts a kilo on low volume, we would be like, you're 4 watts a kilo on low volume. You need to up your the amount of stress you need, right? Like,
yep.
That would be that. So that all that, the more information like that helps us.
Yeah, completely agree.
And Jonathan, it's question 10.
Question 10. Awesome. Okay. So let's jump right to that one. His name is John as well. In fact, this is the follow-up. This is the same John.
Oh, it is.
Check it out. There we are. All right. So he says, and this is the applause we get. He says, hey guys, if there was a Tony Award for best podcast, you'd get it. He knows how to get his questions answered, doesn't he? I sent you a message last week. See, and hopefully that's not implying that we're actors here. This is honest stuff. This is just us being us. I sent you a message last week, and you guys just heard that one, about my FTP not budging on my recent sustained power build. He says, the following workout on Thursday, and it was called Avalanche Spire, for those that know what that workout looks like. And that's an over-under workout, isn't
over-unders,
it?
Over-unders, yeah, peaking. Yep,
where it ramps up, ramps down type exactly. of a thing, yep. Over and under. He said it felt way too easy. Following the advice of Chad's text and in quotes, he says, if that interval left you with more energy, bump up the intensity to 2 to 3% now. I amped up the resistance and did just fine. I decided to push the envelope and moved my FTP from 270 to 280. Nice. Look at that. That's a bold move. Hmm. And the subsequent 3 workouts. Those are Matanuska, Bashful, and Fang Mountain. I've been able to bump up the workout an additional 2 to 3% each time, and I'm contemplating another overall FTP increase. So look at this. He feels like he's getting stronger. That's clear, yeah. Right? He says, so my question, how hard should you be pushing each workout? My understanding has been to stay in the zone the workout is designed around. Until Chad's text, and he says in quotes, yelled at me with a smiley face, to up the intensity, I always assumed I should not be pushing harder on easier workouts as I defeat the purpose of riding just below threshold. Should I change my, so do we want to move on, Chad, or do you want to address that?
Let's just talk about that. So first off, terrific. You have indeed seen fitness improvement. and secondly, the workouts are designed really specifically, but they're also contingent upon a good FTP estimate. And if you don't have a good FTP estimate, as you've seen, the workouts are a little under challenging and a little under stimulating. They don't bring about the same sort of adaptation they would if we were really pushing yourself. So you're on the right track. The fact that you're bumping it up every time might be getting a little carried away, but yeah, you'll find out at some point you're going to get to a point where you just, can't get
that
through the workouts.
That resolves itself.
it'll handle itself, yeah. But each workout does have a purpose. But when it comes to, like I said earlier, the interval workouts, when you get toward the end of them, even with sweet spot, you should be fading. With the VO2 max intervals, the harder they get, the more important the quality. You know, quality is always a concern, but especially with the short, hard stuff where over the course of an hour, you're only doing 15 minutes worth of work. Obviously, that 15 minutes has to be very high quality. When you're doing sweet spot and you got 40 minutes worth of work, well, you know, maybe if you slip on that 5 minutes of the last interval, that 5 minutes isn't of great a consequence as it is with a 15-minute set of quality work. So you're kind of homing in on it. Whether or not you want to reassess and see for sure may not even be appropriate for you, considering it doesn't look like there might be some FTP assessment challenges.
this is a great question because So John sucks at testing, right? I think we've established this. John,
it's okay,
sorry.
John. You'll get better.
But you don't have. So we've talked about this in previous podcasts, but you don't have to test to get your FTP. I think all three of us on the podcast, we've gone through stages in our career where we don't test at all. Mm-hmm. What
I've gone a whole season without testing.
Yeah,
not good. You should have tested.
I'm not advocating it, but it was.
No, I mean, even Andrew Coggin, who's like the father of training with power, like he made up FTP and all in TSS. You don't have to do that. One of his ways is establishing your FTP are intervals that you can do repeatedly in training. So it's totally. We have a blog post about this. I think we even have a support article about this, and maybe we'll do another blog post, Jonathan. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing your workouts, I really like to look at the intensity factor. So there's some rides in there where like the IF of 9 for an hour and a half, that is an extremely hard workout, right? Mm-hmm. That's right at the limit, right? So if you can finish that and you're feeling good at the end, I would say there, and it's not just once, but you've maybe gone through two of those, I would raise my FTP and say, oh, I've got an FTP increase. There's other workouts that we have in there that are, I just did one. It's pretty much threshold. Sorry, I'm going to bring it up right now.
The one thing I want to clear up, because we're about to get an influx of messages, right? And these messages are going to say, you guys have always told us to test, and now you're saying you don't need to test. So we're going to try to be as principle-based as possible with this one, and that's why Nate's bringing up these examples of these specific workouts. So then
we're saying is there are a lot of ways to determine what your FTP is. I mean, you still have to assess. You still have to, in one manner or another, see if you're improving, but you can do that in several ways.
And to be honest, I also think it takes time for you to understand exactly. And when I say time, I mean experience with training, with structured training, with interval training, with FTP testing and training with power.
Absolutely.
To understand how your FTP is trending.
That's a really good point.
With time, you start to, like Nate's saying, you start to know more or less, and you have these workouts where you know, like, this is actually a good indication. My performance at this workout was a solid indication of how I've gone from in one direction or the other, especially if it's a workout that you've done previously. You're able to compare your perception. The tricky part about this, though, no matter what, is that perception does play a role in this to a certain degree, especially if you're on something like an electronic trainer and you're sticking to, and you're just stuck to your goals, because some days you just have a chainless day, but that doesn't necessarily reflect what it'll be like for every other day that you have. So it's always tricky to try to see through the weeds of perception and actually catch objective data and pull observations from that.
This is definitely something for people that are more experienced and you have, you've been with the power meter for a while. But the workout that I'm looking at right now is called Lamarck. That's how you say it. Lamarck. And what that is, it's 4 10-minute intervals at 100% FTP with 2 minutes rest in between. Intensity factor 0.92, and it's 1 hour long. If you can do that workout, and it's pretty easy, like, I think you should raise your FTP, especially if you can do it more than once. Do you agree, Chad?
Yeah, absolutely. 4 10-minute intervals at threshold on an indoor trainer is brutal. It should be very hard. I mean, not impossible, obviously, but by the end of it, and by the end of each of those intervals, you should be really looking for that 2 minute gap. And when that 2 minute gap's over, you should be a little miffed at the fact that it flew by so quickly.
Yeah. So it's like, just to reiterate what Jonathan said, when you're an experienced rider or you're going through and maybe you don't have you can't dig deep enough on the tests.
Yeah. Some people just freak themselves out with tests. Yeah.
It's okay to raise your FTP by a little bit. Especially if you're in a plan, it's just so, this part is tough because what we're trying to do is explain nuance, right?
Yeah.
And if you had Chad looking at every workouts and he knew you, he'd probably tell you, hey, how was that workout? And you'd be like, oh, that was easy. Lamarck was easy. Chad would say, you know what? Why don't we just raise your FTP and do this? It's hard to explain nuance because people want to be like told exactly what to do.
Well, yeah. Another thing we would do post-assessment back when I led classes was a confirmation workout. And it would be something like Lamarck, 4 10-minute intervals. So now you've got this newly assessed FTP or estimated FTP. And we want to see, can you actually repeat efforts at this effort level, sustained efforts? Because this is a measure of your highest sustainable max power, right? So can you do this 4 times 10 minutes with very little recoveries in between? If you can, even if you struggle with it, if you can do it, pretty safe to say your FTP is at least that high. And if you really struggle with it, yeah, we're very much in the ballpark.
Here's the interesting part about this. We're saying that these type of decisions are best made by somebody with experience with training with power, right? But the interesting thing is you increase your familiarity with training with power by training with power. And that's by nature is, you know, FTP based training. So, using testing data and everything else like that. You also become more familiar and more proficient at testing in an ideal world. In some cases you don't. So therefore this is perhaps doesn't relate to certain people. I see more people actually have, and this is, should be very logical. More people have issues with testing and when they're new to testing than when they are experienced with it. Like I see new riders. So my brother's a good example of this. He tested and he underassessed. He felt like he gave it his all, but he didn't know how to really extract all of it during that test. So he felt like the rests were too easy. He was not resting as he should have. And then the work intervals were made too hard. It was causing issues there because he didn't know how to test well yet. So as you continue to familiarize yourself with power-based training and testing, chances are that you'll actually learn to understand, anticipate, and look forward to FTP tests and be able to perform them better. So in the end, we're just proposing an alternative and an alternative with certain asterisks and footnotes next to them.
Jonathan, let's do a blog post about this because I feel like we haven't really nailed it down. And some people right now are like yelling at the...
Yes.
Their iPhone.
Yeah.
Or
so, so for example, you know, we want to measure your what's often called your 40K time trial power. Well, you can go out and do a 40K time trial. If you can, for the better part of an hour, in most cases, an hour, hold a particular power and that's all you could do, there's your FTP. You can look at your race data and look at maybe you had a really hard 20 minute climb where you gave it everything you had. Well, there's effectively a 20-minute test. We're just saying there are other really useful ways outside of a strictly formatted FTP assessment.
You can also look at your normalized power for an hour on a hard race.
There you go.
That is also another way to check out your FTP. Mm-hmm. There's actually, if you Google the 7 deadly sins of power, I think that's what it is. And you can see all the different ways to measure power. And these are established ways that the entire power coaching community goes, all those ways are good. And it kind of goes from
best to worst.
Or is it good to, or is it worst to best?
Yeah,
worst to best. Yeah. And one of the high ones is intervals you can do in training.
There's right now we're working on a blog post right now that's answering the question, is my FTP too low? Because we answered that one last time. And I think that it'll have a good follow up with, if that's the case, then we can show you some other interesting stuff as far as like different testing alternatives. Not necessarily what you should do. Just we'll lay out the info for you so you can see it. So,
Chad, I have one more question with this.
Sure.
Okay. So on week 5, I just did Lamarck. And I really think my FTP is higher right now. But that was, this is in the middle of Sweet Spot Basement Volume 2. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at my workout now. And I did some backpedaling in the last... Actually, in three of the first interval was fine. I did a little backpedaling there. And I think I was a little bit tired and I am losing weight. Mm-hmm. And I want to not say that my FTP is lower and I want to lower it. But that's another nuanced thing, right? It can happen. And later on in a plan, I get tired and I don't nail every workout.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's... Chances are slim that your FTP is actually on the decline. I mean, if anything, you're just overly tired. But if you're training consistently, really slim chance that your fitness is going to drop. Obviously, if you're overtraining, that could happen. But typically, it's just fatigue that needs to be uncovered or caught up with.
You just need some R&R, Nate. That's all you need. Yeah. Some nice rest and sometimes, relaxation.
And sometimes you don't get the R&R. You're just going to have flat workouts here and there. And you use those little modifications like an occasional back pedal or maybe trimming the interval a minute or something, or making a 4-interval workout, a 3-interval workout, because you just didn't quite have it together that day. Doesn't mean your fitness is declining, though.
I think another thing that is I totally have not been eating very much. Mm-hmm. And like on my test, so on test day, I'll kind of eat a few more carbs the night before, and then in the morning, I'll eat a bigger breakfast. And then while I'm doing the test, I'll actually drink Gatorade instead of water. and I'll have like a fig bar or something. And I totally, like, I feel, I am a sugar athlete.
Keep in mind, amazing. Yeah. Nate can eat like none of us.
Yeah, so. you're very carb adapted, as most athletes are. Totally. So when it comes totally to those carb. more draining workouts, absolutely fuel. Make the most of them. Don't worry about weight loss when you're trying to, when you're mostly focused
on
improving fitness.
But I've got a podcast. Man, if you want to lose weight, I said this last time, but just get a podcast and tell everybody.
Such is the life of a cyclist. It's a tough balance.
Your coach prescribed it, Nate. You have to relax in a nice chair this weekend and just sit Mai Tais all day.
He just wants to beat me.
Sit Mai Tais. Even, you know, make yourself feel good and get some cookie dough. That could make you feel good. You know, whatever.
Yeah, your parents bring in the pies and the cakes. Jonathan's wife brings in goodies. I'm the only one here who's not contributing to this temptation.
you know what I'm actually going to do tonight is I've been so low on food is I'm going to do a cheat meal tonight to try to bump up my increase my metabolism. You know, if you diet for a really long time and you don't do any high calorie meals, you can actually lower your metabolism. Is that right, Chad?
Yeah, that's a simplified view of it, but you can have a negative effect on it, especially if you're not exercising, but you're exercising.
Okay. Well, either way,
Nate,
I'm
you just
a pizza
want a
tonight.
Cheat meal. Let's be real. You just want a cheat meal. Tonight, let's call a spade a spade.
You've earned it.
You can have more of those. It's no problem.
I need
no
some problem. mental relaxation.
Let's move on to Neil's question. He says, hi, I've worked through sweet spot base 1, low volume, and I'm 4 weeks into sweet spot base 2, low volume. I'm finding that whenever I start a workout or go out for a ride, my quads feel really tired for the first 20 minutes or so. That feeling is actually worse if I take a couple days off. Should I be looking to work at a lower intensity, have a rest, or just persevere with it? Really enjoying Trainer Road, despite my tired quads. Thanks, Neil.
Neil, this is something I personally deal with quite a lot. Two things I do to remedy it. One is try to get on the bike on my off days, even for like a 20 or 30 minute spin. For whatever reason, psychological, physiological, I feel better in subsequent workouts when I do something in between them. When I stay off the bike, it takes me a long time to get warm, which brings me to the second thing I do, and that's longer warm-ups. So if it's an hour workout and it's got one of those little short cramming in there, 8 minute workouts that throws you right into the intervals, that's a tough way to kick things off when you're a little bit flat. So I'll get on the bike, and I'll try to make myself get on the bike 20 minutes early and just spin easy. And my workout is night and day different. And then of course I undergo the more specific warm-up that's part of the workout. But if you can, either modify the workout with the workout creator or just get on and do a little bit of early spinning. In your case, and in my case, about 20 minutes, it can change things quite a lot.
One thing that I would suggest too, and you may have a fantastic bike fit, Neil, but if there's excessive soreness in a certain muscle group, especially in your quads, that's actually pretty common to see when a person is either too far back on the saddle or the saddle's too far back in relation to the bottom bracket or too far forward. It tends to put a lot of stress there on your quads. So a bike fit could help, but also this whole first 20 minutes or so type of a thing. I've recognized this as well. In fact, a slight confession, many times when I go to a race, I don't dread the effort in a race, but I dread the warm-up. Mm. Because I know the warm-up is where I will really feel pain. After that, I'm all right.
It's my least favorite part of every workout.
Yep, exactly right. The warm-up is the hardest part. Now, we often talk about kind of breaking through that wall, and I'm doing air quotes right now, breaking through that wall that
Wild
you
dancing.
Have. silent dancing, yeah. give me that Tony Award. But Chad, and what is actually going on when you, quote, break through the wall? What is that wall and what's happening? And I guess this is more or less kind of...
Are you talking about during the workout?
Yeah, so when you first start out and you have those first 20 minutes are hard, why does it get easier later on?
You're just warming up. I mean, certain aerobic processes come online. So you're not just automatically ready to roll. You kind of have to... warm the tissue, get the blood circulating, get the aerobic enzymes doing their jobs, basically. So there are processes that have to be kicked off. And when you dive into a workout, you kind of rush those or bypass them entirely, and it just makes things more difficult.
You're also recruiting more muscle fibers, right?
Yep, that's part of that whole process.
And beginning to process lactate.
That too, that's part of the clearing or the metabolic clearing processes that we're trying to stimulate.
I find that during each of the like the structured warm-ups, there's always like a little first interval that's around threshold that's only like a minute or two long. Mm-hmm. And that one I find sometimes is harder than the next interval that'll be like 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That yeah,
just shows so you need to warm up. And especially, I need to warm up better before races. Like,
oh yeah,
a lot of times I won't warm up, especially if I'm going to do mountain bike racing, right? Because it's just, it's go from the beginning, right?
From the gun. You go as hard as you can. So I bring a trainer, and I'm super specific about my warm-ups. And I, whenever I go to any race, I bring a trainer, and I spin on that trainer. And it honestly is, it takes so much of the anxiety out of a warm-up to me. I know it's going to hurt, but I know I do this every time. And I bring a kicker, so I know that it's going to be exactly the same every time. Like, it's very simplified, because to be honest, like we talked about, many times that's the most stressful part of the day for me, is I know that that's going to hurt and be so uncomfortable. But if I get through it and I do the same thing that works for me every time, and it takes a while to kind of find what works best for you for warming up. Some people warm up differently than others, so they respond to different protocols differently. Mm-hmm. But once you find it and you stick to it, it can be really, really helpful.
So, yeah, that's a good point too. I was reading a study just the other day that compared a high intensity warm up, a very specific warm up, to a low intensity, longer warm up. And they actually, in this particular study's case, saw better results with the guys who basically just noodled for 20 minutes at about 65%. And then they followed it up with VO2 max work. So you may respond to different warm up protocols differently. Feel free to experiment.
Yeah, no. I personally, I have a pretty standard warm-up protocol where it has me sitting at threshold for quite a while. I sit at threshold for 2 minutes at first, and then eventually, then I get into a more intense, shorter efforts, and then I actually end up holding threshold for like 3 to 4, I think it's 3 minutes is what I hold it at, or 4 minutes before I end up shutting it down to cool down. So, and that benefits me, and it sucks, man. It hurts, but it's by the time the gun goes off, especially in a cross country race, when you are sprinting as hard as you can from the gun and trail position is, or position in the race is so key, I'm warmed up and ready. So, yeah. And I've done something that's harder in many cases. So, Simon, I ride on a Cyclops Fluid 2 trainer with virtual power. And often in order to hit the power numbers, I'm forced to ride at a couple of different cadences. Even after tinkering with the gears, there's only so many cadence options that will let me ride at the power target required. When the workout tech suggests raising the cadence, I either have to keep the bike in the same gear and put, occasionally quite a bit more, power into the pedals, or drop the gears and put out less power. I've been going with more power option, but this does have a tendency to raise my heart rate more than the couple of beats suggested by the workout text. Is there a better option in the more power or less power equation? Or do you have any other tips regarding how to be able to get this quick cadence at the recommended power target without needing to buy a new trainer?
Yeah, Simon, with the equipment issues aside, just understand the prioritization of the workout's objectives. And typically power, almost always, power comes first. So if altering your cadence, which is, you know, going to be a secondary objective, affects that and turns the workout into something it's not supposed to be, then in the case of your trainer, you're limited in that respect. So don't worry about it. You know, you don't necessarily
not the trainer actually, or it's probably his gearing.
Okay, so yeah exactly. Gears. So your gearing won't allow it. In any case, prioritize power over everything else. Probably 9 times out of 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the most important thing. Is despite their equipment, understand the priorities there. And on the equipment side of things, with a cassette, we've talked about this before. In fact, on our blog, that's blog.trainerroad.com. You can find it on there. But we even have a link to an 1125 cassette on there. That's a narrow range cassette for 12 speeds. It's pretty hard to find one that's going to be down to like a 1122, like the old days that we used to see. That's a lot of like 8-speed, 9-speed stuff. But for an 11-speed cassette or 10-speed cassette, an 1125 or 1225, if you can find that, I think they might have that too. That's a pretty tight spread, and that's really helpful on getting granular with your cadence and power adjustments and being able to mix it around. Having said that, so you're on a Cyclops Fluid 2, and those trainers, I don't know how old your trainer is, Simon, but it's a fluid unit that isn't fully sealed. And I've seen in a lot of cases where that fluid actually either leaks and or deteriorates because it just has a paper gasket between the two parts of the shell there. And that could be affecting the performance of the trainer in one direction or another, possibly making it more difficult. But so that's just something to keep in mind. It's certainly not the case with all of them, but I have seen it before. So.
Yeah. For jet fluid, Cyclops jet fluid too, if you're looking to buy a new Cyclops trainer and or if you want to, and your choice is between the Fluid 2 or the Jet Fluid Pro.
The Jet Fluid Pro
is like $20 more, but we've ran that against a machine that we hook up to trainers. That thing is like super stable with virtual power and stuff, and I highly recommend that one. Cassettes, if you want to build up like a trainer, we have an old wheel, and you have maybe a trainer tile or old tire that will go flat on the road. We have one of those here, and I put a 1223 cassette on it. That's for a 10 speed. And that is really nice on the trainer, as you can, like, for things where you want to adjust your cadence, when you shift between, there's really small steps. So it's easier to hit whatever the target is with small steps, rather than if you have something, you know, giant, like 1128 or something like that.
Yeah, and I think that Shimano and SRAM have those cassettes in 1223. I know Shimano does, and you can find them on either your local shop or anything else. You can find them for anywhere from like $50, anywhere around there or below, sometimes slightly above. It depends. It looks like retail on the Ultegra version of that one's $100. So, but yeah, give those a shot.
I see one right now for $38.
Nice. So, and Shimano and SRAM are always interchangeable, so keep that in mind there. So, let's move on to Michael's question. He says, first off, great podcast. Where can I give you reviews for Android based podcasts? 5 stars for sure. So, Michael, in that case, you can, whatever app you are using, the way podcasting works is that essentially we just submit our RSS feed into iTunes and iTunes, or then a bunch of apps pick from iTunes database of different podcast feeds. So, even Android ones. So in that case, if you're using Stitcher or if you're using Pocket Cast or Downcast or anything else like that, you can leave a review on Stitcher is probably the best way to do it if you're on Android. Or you can always just log on to iTunes and leave us one there. Or actually, you don't have to log on. You can just go there. And I know if you're an Android guy, it might feel icky touching something Apple, but just the same, you can leave one there. Or just go on to Sound, or just share it. To be honest, that's a really helpful way too. We appreciate that. So he says, I noticed that my power is much smoother at lower power and cadence. So he's saying that both lower power and cadence. And then he says, is it normal to be a little more jagged at higher power and higher cadence? Also, so let's just stop there and talk about that actually before we move on. Chad, what do you say?
Yeah, it's just easier to be smoother at a slower spin and a lower power output. That's just the nature of what we're doing. And if you have any inconsistencies or issues with your pedal stroke, they only get exacerbated the harder you work and more quickly you spin. So definitely not unique to you, Michael. We're all in that same boat.
And also don't worry about jagged power data too much. I mean, it should be your goal always to be as smooth as you can. That's for sure. But I think a lot of the time people come into this seeing something like heart rate data and how steady and how slowly that changes, and they come into power and they think something's wrong because it's so jagged. But we're
so many people think that all the time. They're like, my power meter's broken.
Yeah,
because it says I'm going like up 20 watts and down 20 watts every second.
Or like just actually a masher. Yeah, it's fluctuating even more than that. It's just your power meter is just pulling certain things. So we're not metronomes, we're not machines, as cool as it would be. We're not. So no worries there. He says, also, I'm planning on doing some crit races early in the season and then doing a century later. Can I revisit a sustained power build phase and specialty phase mid-season to prepare for the century? Any advice is greatly appreciated.
Yeah, Michael, this is actually the very reason that we are at least embarking on restructuring things to refer more to seasons. Or is that what we landed on? Seasons?
Dude. Uh-huh. This isn't public.
I don't want to let anything out of the bag. The fact is, a lot of people don't plan their entire year around a single event. They don't even plan it around a single sport or discipline within the sport. So you can absolutely mix things up the way you need to. And a lot of time, you know, once you do your base training, typically it's out of the way. Then it's just about bouncing back and forth between builds and specialties and rebuilds and specialties and portions of each. So structure the workout or structure your season any way you need to. In your case, you're going to do some crits, and then exactly what you've mentioned, figure out how many weeks you can devote to a build plan, and sustained power is absolutely the way to go when it comes to riding a century. And even if it's just a small portion of it, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, and then move on to your specialty and time that according to your event.
If you want to know where Trainer Road is going, just buy Chad a couple beers. We'll tell you the whole thing.
tell you everything.
We're just going to edit out all of that in post. We'll just change that out.
No, you guys keep that in because that little teaser. But I mean, it's not, we still have some, we need to get our Android app out and our Mac app out before we get into some of that other fun stuff.
Good stuff is on the way, though. Or
yes.
The revamp of the Mac app. There is already a Mac app.
All right, last question for today is Dan's question. He says, I've been using Trainer Road for over a year and think it's great. I have just invested in a Stages power meter and was planning to use it to pace a hilly sportif in the UK called Fred Witten Challenge. I've just bought a Stages power meter too, Dan. I love mine. Works well. And to be honest, I was pretty skeptical about them just because really the whole media push behind it. Remember they came out and like every other power meter company was like, oh, these guys are making a garbage product because it was cheaper, but now they're all dropping down to Stages prices because they're fantastic power meters and you know they work just as good. It's just they were cheaper. So
and if you open the box, you get a picture of Jonathan in it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you can see me in there.
Added yep. bonus.
Yeah.
There's a free month of Trainer Road in
with Stages power meter
all of
boxes,
them now. Yeah,
every single one of them, you get a free month of Trainer Road. It's pretty cool.
So. And the picture of that is Jonathan. And also on our podcast, too, our little image, you can see Jonathan.
Yeah, I'm everywhere. And if, if you're a Trainer Road member, you still get that free month, by the way. You can apply it to your account. Or you could hand that out to somebody who doesn't have Trainer Road yet. That would be awesome. So sure. Nate's...
Share the love.
Share the love. Nate's smiling right now. He likes that. So he says, this is a 110-mile event with multiple steep mountain passes and a total ascent of 3,800 meters. That's quite a lot. Some of the passes are very steep, up to 30% gradient, and require maximum effort just to get up them. How do I adjust the percentage of FTP at which I ride, the easier parts of the course, and how should I use power to pace the hills, assuming I'm not maxed out to just move forward? Thanks, Dan.
Dan, the first thing I'd recommend, and I'm sure both the fellows will back me up on this, is to choose the proper gearing. If you're going to face 30% grades, you have the option, if you have the option of going compact gearing, do so, and then put the biggest cog you can get on there, because you're not going to be able to do much in terms of percentage of FTP when all you can do is barely turn the pedals over. Those really steep climbs are going to be incredibly taxing.
On a 30% grade, if you've got anything below... I mean, a 28 is in the back with a compact crank set up front. Still, a 28 is going to be tough. If you can go to a 30, 32, 34, 36, that would be a normal mountain bike cassette, like an 11, 36. That, and I know SRAM, I don't know about Shimano, but I know SRAM's derailleurs accommodate that now. That would be something I would recommend.
Yeah, and then Dan, you just have to decide whether or not you're racing this, or you know, just looking to finish it, maybe PR it, or how you're going to approach it. If you're racing it, well, the decisions are going to be made for you. You're simply going to have to hang on until you can't hang on. Hopefully, you'll hang on till the end of the race or the end of the sportive. Otherwise, you're just going to pace it like anything else. You know, the climbs are obviously going to be sub threshold, and depending on their duration, it's super specific to you, Dan. You have to know what you can do on the flats that leave you refreshed enough to be able to hit another climb. I'm sorry, I can't be more specific than that, but
I'll help.
Sure.
Best bike split.
Yes. Right.
So if you do that, you'll know. The only difference is going to be is that during your race, you're going to be able to draft. So best bike split's not going to take that into account, but that'll at least give you percentage targets for all the FTP percentage for all the climbs. And then hopefully that'll give you you'll have a little extra gas and, you can use that somewhere else in the race, because I'm guessing on the flats, hopefully, unless you're by yourself, you'll be able to draft a little bit and it'll be a little bit easier on the flats.
Yeah. And because of that, I wouldn't recommend taking the best bike split intervals and then using those Like, cause I see a lot of people use the best bike split intervals and they build a workout with like for their Garmin based off of that. But since you'll be drafting and since this is going to be a variable day, I'm sure you may end up getting far behind. So that would be pretty frustrating to be out of touch there, but you can kind of use it as a cheat sheet. And what I would do is I would look at the intervals that coincide with the climbs and or the flats and find some key spots that you think you'll need to be reminded when you need to maintain that power. And do the same thing the pros do with a cheat sheet. Print it out on a piece of paper or write it down and then tape that with some clear tape to the top of your stem or to your top tube and remind yourself that on this climb, you're supposed to hold this. And yeah, I think that would be the best bet. And best bike split is a huge tool for something like this. So
the other thing about this too is if you're with Sportives, you can ride in packs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So
you have like brakes for oranges and stuff. It's awesome.
If you got a group, a real good group of 30 guys or 30 people, and you're up at the top of a climb and they punch a little bit at the top of the climb, don't just let the group, drop you because you want to stay inside your FTP. I would go with them because you're going to get a better benefit for the next 20 miles while you're drafting in a group of 30 than mm-hmm. to like, I've done this before. That's why I'm saying it. Then be like, oh, I can't go over 85% of my FTP for this climb. So bye-bye, guys. I'll see you later. Because then you just ride by yourself for the rest of the race.
And on 30% gradients, you're just going to be lucky to make it up.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
So
you might walk that.
Yeah, whatever power it takes to get up that. And certainly don't try to be a hero or try to be a hero if that's what you're going for the day. That's kind of the cool thing about these sportives. Like, you get to pick what your objective is. And that should also be reflected when you break things down with best bike split. If you're going off of FTP to see like your max potential, or if you know that you want to hit a certain time, or kilojoules, you can break down your race plan a number of different ways when you use their app. So we're huge fans of it.
Guys, have you ridden 30% on the road?
Yeah, you know, before? I was going to say something about that. I've read race reports or course descriptions that throw things out like that, 30% grade, mm-hmm. and it boils down to a single switchback on the entire course.
And so it's like six literally. Inches. It's yeah, like six exactly. inches of it on the very inside.
It's just you're heading this way, now you're heading this way, and over the course of that switch from direction to direction, it was 30%. So, I mean, really look at the course description or the Strava map or whatever.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
you might, crazy too, if you're going steep. Really, I've seen it when on the road when they're going really steep like that, is you don't go up it, you go kind of side to side.
Yep.
Like you it's traverse. Your own built-in switchbacks, yep. But then people fall over. It's almost faster just to walk up it because I've seen this before where I'll be like inside of a town and they'll go up something that's extremely steep, but it's only like 100 feet or 200 feet or something.
Yeah.
But you just see all these cyclists fall over. I would just get off and walk up and not fall. And
or it can, enjoy if it really is 30% and you have to walk, that'd be terrifying in road shoes walking up a 30% gradient. But
yeah, exactly.
To be honest, so there's a climb here locally called Ebbets Pass. Really famous climb, really cool climb. If any of you are in Tahoe, you should totally ride down there. It's down by Markleyville. And that one has a sign that says 32% grade. There's no 32% grade pitch except for one corner there. It's called Cadillac Curve. It's a really, really tight switchback. And if you, ride on like the final centimeter to the inside for about 6 inches, it's probably that steep. I mean, it's still very steep. That climb is plenty steep. It's measured when I'm riding, it's plus 18% in a lot of places. But it's certainly that they have to put that down in a lot of cases with road signs because what they're trying to do is they're actually trying to tell semi trucks and everything else for clearance issues and all that stuff or whatever vehicle. But, and also if you're an event organizer, I would definitely, you fudge the numbers. It makes it look cooler. Mm-hmm. So.
I'm Googling this race and I see a picture and I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people walking their bikes and one guy riding it. And, he looks like he's having problems.
Yeah.
So they're probably, it looks like there is a very steep section where let's see another picture, 2 people riding and like 8 people walking.
Yeah. There's a guy that's in a ditch walking probably because his cleats were sliding all over the place.
Yeah. So it looks like this one might have, it obviously has something that is extremely steep and,
you might just want to skip this one, Dan.
Pack it in, find a flat crit, a nice 10K TT, something like that you can do there. But this does look like a cool event. So best of luck with that one, Dan. That looks pretty cool. Thanks for all the questions this week, guys. We'll answer more of them next week. Keep submitting them to support@trainerroad.com. You can leave us reviews, remember, on iTunes or on Stitcher. You can also download that podcast there. Listen to it on SoundCloud. Leave comments on SoundCloud too. If there's a question that you find is particularly helpful, or if you have a question about something, you can leave them in there and we check it out. And we can moderate it that way. You can find all the other information we've talked about here on the blog. That's blog.trainerroad.com. So let us know if you guys have any questions, submit them. Thanks so much, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.